This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
It's the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 75, sponsored by ComicHole.com.
Really? 75?
That's a lot. Hey, and welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. It's 75 episodes.
Jesus. That's a ton. Weren't we supposed to do something on an episode like this?
Stop.
You know what?
Stop.
Okay. I am Josh, and I'm here with Ron.
Hey.
And Connor.
Hello.
And it's iFanboy.com, which you probably know means is about comic books, because we like to read them. So every week we read a whole bunch of them, then one of us will pick the one that we liked best. That's all. That's the whole shtick. We pick the one we liked best, and then we do a review on the website, and then we talk about it here on the podcast once a week. Before we get going, we like to warn the people, if you're new, we're going to talk about the books that happened and the details therein. So if you haven't read your books yet, you shouldn't listen now. You should come back and listen after you've read them. It will be much more enjoyable. So we got a lot to get to. So Ron.
Yeah.
You.
Me. So,
bring it.
I was kind of excited about this week because when I looked at the shipping list on Monday, I didn't have a lot of books. I had like 5 or 6 books. And I was like, nice, nice late week. Yet when I looked again on Wednesday, I had like 10 books. I don't know how that happened.
That happened to me too.
Yeah, it was very odd. But interestingly enough, you know, the majority of the books I read were all really, really good. And as I whittled down through my pile, I was kind of having a tough time once again figuring out which book to read, and I really had to go with Avengers: The Initiative #1. And personally, I tend to have a bit of a bias against going with #1 issues because I feel it's kind of like it's easy to pick a #1 because there's so much energy behind it. And it's like blah, you know. Like I like to pay attention to like number, you know, 37 or something like that, you know, because that is the real telltale quality of a book of an ongoing series. But every now and then, these #1 books come and they just kind of blow you away. And basically, to give the background of it is that for, you know, if you're living in a hole and you don't know what happened in the Marvel Universe, is the Civil War has come and gone now.
Isn't knowing what happened in the Marvel Universe actually like living in a hole? Really?
Possibly. I could see that. So anyway, so the so what has happened now is that Iron Man's side has won, and now all superheroes need to be registered. And if they're not there, are they villains or are they just unlawful superheroes?
They're like, criminals.
So Luke Cage is a villain? No, there's a difference between a criminal and a villain, huh?
Yes.
Is this semantics I'm talking
about? Yes,
here?
They're okay. Criminals, sort of, but not villains.
Okay. But in the eyes of the law, they are right. They are criminals, just like right. A villain is a criminal. So you can be, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so and conversely, Iron Man and his squad are going about training new superheroes, and this book is really focused on that idea of taking in new superheroes and training them. We find out that they've built a training facility on the grounds of the Stanford disaster in Stanford, Connecticut, where the school blew up.
That's a good idea.
Which is a great idea. And
I didn't mean that seriously. I meant that ironically.
I thought it was a good idea. I don't know.
I don't mind it.
Yeah, I don't mind.
It's hollowed ground, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, no, it's not hollow. They put a pavement down.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying, too. But, I mean, what do you want, a big tower? Oh, I just got political, didn't I?
That's never going to happen.
Yeah, anyway. And in this book, we're introduced to the concept of new superheroes being introduced with powers and then getting, you know, kind of recruited and brought to the facility and going through and beginning their training. It was written by Dan Slott, and it was – the art is by a guy with a great name.
Caselli?
Stefano Caselli. Stefano Caselli. I'm Italian. I should be able to say that. Anyway, and Dan Slott, for those of you who aren't familiar with his work, previously he's done some work for DC. He did Arkham Asylum, I believe, right?
Arkham Asylum miniseries.
Yeah. And he's done the majority of his work with Marvel. He started – everybody knows his story of starting out as a Marvel intern, and he's got this reputation of being a real kind of Marvel history and just kind of the original kind of Marvel, you know, the Fantastic Four, you know, Avengers kind of side of things, the straight-laced Marvel universe.
And the first work he did as a writer was, like, cartoon books, like, you know, like, yeah, silly – I forget exactly which ones, but they were, like, the property books that were, like Smurfs and stuff.
Right. But actually, I think it was like Ren and Stimpy and stuff like that.
Yeah, things like that. But either way, there was like more kids material. And so I think that he had a longer time breaking into this kind of stuff.
Yeah. And most recently, he's gotten popularity by his run on The Thing, which was very short and got canceled very quickly, even though there seemed to be a lot of loyal fans, although the sales didn't match that.
Well, the people who loved it really, really loved it. It was a cult thing, I think.
Right. And he did some work on what I enjoyed, another take on the Great Lakes Avengers, which is always fun. And he's got an ongoing right now with She-Hulk, which has been really good too. But all of his books that he's done up to this point have been kind of whimsical, maybe kind of
jokey,
fun, jokey. I mean, like they're steeped in the superhero universe, but they've been a little wacky at times, and there's just kind of this thread of humor. So knowing that this was, I would guessing that this is supposed to be a serious book, I was not too sure how he would do. And he brought the goods. He wrote a serious superhero book.
I wasn't going to buy this. Yeah. And you know, like I hadn't planned to, and literally because listen, I like him. We did the interview with him and everything, and he was a cool guy and he was really nice, but I didn't really connect with his work ever. And I'm standing in line and I look to my right and it's like on an end cap, and I just kind of was like flipped through it, and for some reason I just decided to buy it on a whim, and I was so pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I mean, and basically the why this reached out at me is because it really touched on that, a little bit of that, and I mentioned it in the review on ifanboy.com, if you want to go there and check it out to read it under the pick of the week, it had a little bit of the feeling of the, you know, we've talked about this in the past, the Avengers unveiling their new lineup, that kind of that energy behind a new team, but it also had a touch of the young X-Men joining the mansion, joining, you know, being trained, kind of new X-Men kind of feel to it because we've got these recruits. And in a very short period of time, we're introduced to a handful of characters who I've never seen before, who I believe are new for this issue. Like, there might be some people.
I think they're all new.
He got to create a bunch of characters and new superheroes. That doesn't happen all that often.
And then at the same time as he created them, in this first issue, again, a concept that I love, shit happens. Stuff went down by the end of the issue, and it ends on a great cliffhanger. Basically, we're introduced to this character who could potentially be the next Captain America in terms of his powers and his natural ability. And here's the big spoiler: he gets killed in a training session. And somehow Slott was able to write it in a way that really made me care about the character.
He'd only shown up a couple of pages beforehand, and maybe it's like we missed Captain America or whatever. But I was like, ooh, look, he's like – I think they said that he's the fastest time that any non-superhuman did or non-speedster or something. I immediately liked him for some reason.
Well, one thing Slott did well with this book was he made almost all the new characters seem real. You cared about them by the end of the book. I didn't buy it. I don't plan to buy it, but I did read Ron's copy.
No, that's okay. That's good enough. That's close enough. But he created some great characters who I was able to connect with, and now I can't wait to see the next issue. And at the same time, though, as he said when we interviewed him for the video show a couple episodes back, it really got the feeling of, you know, the kind of camera lens. If you move left and right, you see people from the Marvel Universe, and there was a ton of Marvel characters.
Triathlon!
You know, yeah, the triathlon. but I was psyched to see Justice or, you know, Vance Astrovic from the New Warriors. He was in it prominently. War Machine, you know, Hank Pym is Yellow Jacket, who was fantastic. And, you know, and Henry Peter Gyrich, or Henry David Gyrich, or Peter Gyrich, yeah, that's it.
Peter.
The Gyrich dude who is always, you know, the
Shouldn't
fun,
you know?
Yeah, I know the names. Gyrich. That's all you need to know is Gyrich. But
I think the test for me will be if these characters actually stick.
Yeah.
Well, that's the question, because this is supposed to be the one about all of the different states having teams.
Right.
So if they stick with this one team, or maybe
It could be almost like an approach like Brubaker's doing a Criminal, where we get like 4 or 5 issues about this team training in Stanford, and then we switch to the Utah team.
Or maybe this doesn't become a team, like these people all get spread out. So one goes to Wyoming, and one goes to North Carolina, and one goes to Florida, you know, and then you follow them individually as more people come around them. I mean, it's at this pace, though, it's going to take a long time to cover a lot of ground.
I'm curious what the plans are. Originally, this was supposed to be a mini, and it got changed to an extended series.
It should be able to go on indefinitely.
Yeah, it should, if done well, and hopefully people will buy it, because, like I said,
you know... it'll go on until whenever they decide to change back the whole, and repeal the whole Superhero Registration Act.
Right after Captain America comes back, right?
Right, so, they've got a year or two out of this, and then they'll go back.
It'll be good. Oh, wow. Listen to the pessimist. So Avengers Initiative number one, it grabbed me, and so I'm definitely hooked on for the ride, and we'll see how it goes.
I'm really glad I picked it up.
Yeah. But the close second behind it for a similar reasoning was Justice League of America number 7. And Connor, are you still with us on this book? Or?
Yeah, and I liked it when I read it, but then I like it less and less as time goes on.
This particular issue?
Yes.
Really? Why? What happened?
Yeah, it was a little too sappy. There was a little bit too much of the... in a similar vein of the too much Red Tornado love, this time there was just too much love overall. Like
the Justice League, it was a little too much. What happened in the book?
Well, basically, this is almost like a first issue. It was the team. Finally, after 7 issues, now we've got a team, which was the team we've had for the first 6 issues, but now they're just official.
I almost feel like the first 6 issues were like the mini series. And then this is the first issue of the ongoing.
I just feel like he had that Red Tornado story stuck in his head that he wanted to tell about turning.
Why couldn't that have been the second story, though? You know what I mean? Like,
no, I don't know.
That was a poor lead-in. I liked a lot of it. I liked the idea that that Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman decided they were going to take a step back and let the other people decide the team because, you know, it's not always all about them. And I like the idea. I like the whole Red Arrow change. I liked Green Arrow's reaction to it. And I liked the Hal Jordan Black Canary interaction with it. I thought that was the best part of the book.
Yeah, I think Meltzer writing Red Arrow or Arsenal, whatever, is possibly the best writing of that character I've seen in years.
I groaned heavily at the Hall of Justice.
Yeah, I did too. Big time.
That's when I went, oh, see, this is my problem with the book. It's just it's too throwbacky.
I did. I flipped the page and I was like, no, this is not the direction we need to go in.
Yeah, this is the wrong way.
I hear next issue they're going to introduce Marvin.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And Gleek.
Actually, Marvin was in the Teen Titans a few like last year.
Oh, was he? Oh,
jeez. But I'm going to stay with it because I'm looking forward to the Justice League, Justice Society crossover, and those are always good. Plus,
that's
Jeff Johns will be writing it. So
that's more characters than anyone knows what to do with.
That's a lot of people.
I was really enthused about it at the beginning because it was so much better than the Red Tornado storyline. But then, you know, the more groan-inducing elements sort of pop out in my head the more I think about it. And it's just overall the tone is just not what I want to have, especially... I think what doesn't help is I'm currently rereading the Grant Morrison run in trades that I bought.
You want to live in the past.
Well, that was the way to do it, and it hasn't been done well since Grant Morrison left.
Yeah.
I really liked sections of it.
Yeah, pieces are good.
Really good, but overall, like, I mean, the first 3 issues or 4 issues were the team coming together, and while this was fun on its own, like, we did this already.
Yeah, well, this whole issue was basically what happened in the first 6 issues, minus the whole Red Tornado, you know, Solomon Grundy aspect of it.
So it's like we gathered the team together for a really long time, and then to finish it up, let's gather the team together. And, I mean, Also, the printing error in this book really threw me off.
Yeah, that did throw me off big time.
There was a printing error, and some of the pages were printed out of order, and it was really confusing.
That's a good way to confuse your readers. It's like, yeah, here.
This book's not confusing enough as it is. Now we're, now we're just going to fuck with you and put the pages all out of order. You know what's bad is that from the reaction we've been reading is a lot of people did not even notice, and that's how bad, that's how confusing the first six issues were.
I'll be honest with you, I kind of glossed over it.
I went back and forth for a moment. I couldn't tell if it was badly written or if it was a mistake.
Yeah, for a moment I kind of went, huh? And then I said, shrugged and moved on.
I liked the fold-out page.
Yeah.
That was actually some good work from Ed Bennis, and I liked the old teams in the background. But overall, it's just something is not right. And I think it's just the fact that it's too old school.
What's the deal with Geoforce? Where'd he come from? Why do I care?
He's been around forever.
Yeah. I know that, but why is he part of this now?
Because he loves Geoforce, the Red Tornado, and that whole era of Justice League.
Oh. Meltzer, that is, loves it?
Yes, Meltzer.
You know who I do like a lot, and I hope they use more, is Black Lightning. They've taken a character who could be horrible.
Yeah.
And really sort of, he's, I don't know, I find him interesting. I think he seems to me like he's written to be sort of the leader of the team, which is...
Well, Black Canary's the leader.
Yeah, they elected her as the chairman.
Oops. Yeah, that's right. That's true. But I don't know anything. I don't know.
Which makes sense. Black Canary is the original the founder of the team.
Yeah, and she was the leader. She was like the field leader for Birds of Prey for a long time too. Right.
Right.
I learned the backup story in 52.
It just doesn't. It just doesn't. I don't know. It just doesn't resonate.
You know what? I think there. I feel like we've wasted a lot of time.
Yeah,
getting
totally
to where we are. And now the next issue is going to be okay. You've got the team. They're all together. You got to go do something with them. Tell a story about them.
Seven months is way too long to have nothing happen.
Now here's the question, though. Is that jumping right into a JSA crossover the right thing to do?
Yeah, why not? Oh, my God. You know what? Issue Zero came out when we were in the San Diego Con. That was last July.
Yeah.
Nothing has happened since last July in this book.
Oh, God, that's so stupid.
That's bad. But, no, I think this is going to be fun, the JSA-JLA crossover. If it's not fun, here's my pledge to you. Here's my pledge.
Okay.
If it's not fun, I'll drop it.
Wow, that's bold.
Yeah.
Yeah, but fun is such a subjective thing. You'd be like, well, that was kind of fun.
No, if it's anything like the first six issues, then forget it.
No, Connor's fairly easy to read. If he likes it, he'll stick with it. It's not. I don't think there's going to be a lot of gray area. You and I can invent gray area, but Connor's pretty black and white with this stuff, especially with the Justice League.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I don't want to. I'm sound like I'm bitching about it. I didn't not enjoy reading it. I did.
No, yeah.
Well, like I said, I liked pages. I liked sections. I liked the scenes in it. You know, the stuff with what's her name, the Animal Man woman,
Vixen.
Vixen, whatever. I can't remember her name.
She didn't fly with the birds in this issue, though.
You know what? That's a good way to describe it. In section, taken scene by scene, they were good. There's nothing. There's no cohesiveness.
Yeah.
There's nothing that holds it together.
I could see that.
I think there's too many things going on.
And that stupid Hall of Justice.
If it didn't... here's the question. If it didn't have the Hall of Justice, if it was just like a building, a new design or something like that, would you have been better with it?
Yeah, been a lot better. Because the Hall of Justice represents the whole direction they're going with the book.
Yeah,
it's a metaphor for the whole.
But they also have a satellite, though.
Thank God, because I was by the way, why would you put that in the middle of Washington D.C.? You're just asking for a bunch of supervillains to come blow up the Capitol.
Right. Yeah.
the Watchtower made sense. It was away from people.
Yeah.
Although they're trying to use this now, this is a symbol.
In addition to Justice League and Avengers. Yeah, great covers, actually. Yeah,
oh, the Justice League covers were great, yeah.
Yeah, they were really good, really clever. This was also Joss Whedon week. Did you guys notice that?
Yes.
Yes.
So we had Runaways number 25 and Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 2. Which one do you want to start with?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I think, was my pick of the week.
It was really good. It was for those of you to follow up on when Buffy Snapfire. Wow,
Buffy Snapfire.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Buffy
I just mixed that all.
Slap happy.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 1
Stanky
came out.
Thank you, Buffy.
I bought it because I was curious, but I had said I had no idea what was going on, and we asked a lot of people to tell me what was going on.
And
we got a lot of responses.
We got a lot of responses. We got a lot of very generous people with DVDs, and so I wanted to personally thank everybody who wrote in. I know we haven't gotten back to all of you yet, but we will. But needless to say, I think I'm getting learned on Buffy over the next couple of months.
Yes.
And especially after this issue, I'm okay with that. So
this issue, I mean, I really had fun with the first issue, and it was good, and it made me remember when I used to like and watch Buffy, but this issue was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
This issue was really, really interesting and funny and exciting.
This issue is bringing Dark Horse to the podcast, really. Yes. Because we don't really pay that much attention to Dark Horse, so, which is unfortunate.
Well, unless you read Star Wars comics, there's not really much.
No, they do more.
Hellboy book in 2003.
I still don't know who a lot of the people are.
Right.
But I felt as if I understood what was happening.
Yes, totally.
And I'm trying to not get hung up on the fact that I'm supposed to know who these people are, and I'm just going with it.
Yeah, that's a good attitude to take. I think in the first issue there was a lot of confusion because you really are dropped into it. But now that you've had an issue to deal with that, you kind of know the world that they're in. You can go with it even if you don't know all the details.
Yeah.
And he's such a good writer. He can do that. And the dialogue was great. And
this is really good. The dialogue this week. Yeah.
And I thought the art was a lot.
That guy's carving out a career for himself.
I know. I think this is the Whedon's guy is gonna go somewhere.
He's so slumming.
I know.
He's only doing 6 issues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then Brian
K. Vaughan. Can't get a movie made to save his life. So.
Is it Brian K. Vaughan and then Loeb is coming on after Vaughan, right?
Yeah.
So it was good. It was really good. But on the flip side of the coin, what did we think of the new direction of Runaways?
I don't want to say I wasn't really expecting a lot, but I just sort of was like, I don't know, it'll be different or what. It was great. I really enjoyed this issue. One thing that he did that I thought was he had the voices of everybody right away. Like, I felt like he really had a handle on the characters. So all of that press and lip service for years about this being his favorite book and everything, I think, rang true, which was neat. And then finally, the idea of having them team up more or less with the Kingpin, I was way to go bold with that.
That was a master stroke.
Go, yeah, like was, he went yeah. big, and you love that.
Well, because
he's not afraid to go big. That's it.
I know.
What I was curious about is what was he going to do to differentiate himself from
Are you drunk?
I might be hammered. what was he going to do to differentiate himself from what Vaughn did? And Vaughn really got – and what I think suffered in the last year or year and a half of Vaughn's run was that he got away from the whole villain aspect. Mm-hmm. And that was what made the first one so good, was that their parents were villains and they wanted to be good and stuff like that. And this really comes back to that. It comes back to the core of why this group is together. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was not only was it bold, but it was like I wouldn't have thought of it, and that's why he gets paid a lot. And I don't
the killer angel character.
Yeah,
is this someone who exists?
No, I think it's new.
Yeah,
I've never seen him before. Okay. If he's not new, then color me surprised.
And then, of course, at the very end, here's the spoiler: Frank shows up. Frank is the last page character in the Marvel universe. Like, what is he gonna do? I'm not really sure, but at the last page, Punisher.
He's a great cliffhanger guy. He really is.
But is he in? I'm not reading what's going on with Punisher right now. Is he in a position to be hanging out and doing this? Is he just?
I don't think it all counts.
I don't care. Yeah. Traditionally the issues of this that I've liked the best are the ones that had the least to do with the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
Like when they got to New York in the last volume and they were with Cloak and Dagger and the Avengers, I was like, I didn't care. I didn't want that. But it feels better with this. For some reason.
Yeah. Well, them being in New York, they can't avoid it. I mean, that was what made it unique. That was in L.A. and it was separated from that world. And it's gonna be interesting to see now to bring him back and throw him into it. What happens, especially when they're on the wrong side of the team? So.
Yes, I was excited. I thought the art worked very well for me.
Did you really like the art? This is Michael Ryan. He previously was on New Excalibur, so I was curious how he was going to do, and I actually thought that he was going to get a lot of shit for the art. I thought it was good. I liked what he did in New Excalibur.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it a lot. I mean, it wasn't the same, and I loved the artist before.
Yeah.
What did you think, Ron?
I liked it. I mean, I liked his work in New Excalibur, so I enjoyed it. I mean, no problem with it. I thought it was admirable. It didn't stand out as like, oh my god, amazing. So. Mm-hmm. But the art now in this book never really has, So
It has to fit though. I think it's like Bagley. Bagley's art doesn't blow you away; it just works.
Doesn't blow you away. I like.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Really? A lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. So.
I've never really liked. I mean, I don't buy this again. I'm buying it in the digest. So I'm wait for the digest to come out. But I was never really impressed with the art in Runaways. I always thought that was the worst part of the book.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's very Eastern inspired.
No, I preferred Ramos as Crosby.
It's like manga inspired, I think.
Oh, interesting. I don't know if I see that.
Really?
Which one? The new guy?
No, the old artist.
Oh, the old. Oh, I thought I'm looking at the Michael Ryan.
No. I mean, it was previously, and I thought that fit because it felt like it felt like a forward moving book. Like it was like, this is the next iteration of comic books. This is where it has to go. And because of that, I think it was very successful with people who don't normally read Marvel comics.
Right. So do you think it's taking a step back then now, given that?
A little bit in that sense. But it exists in the Marvel universe. So, you know, why not? Right.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's recommended. I think, you know, it was good, obviously. The man writes good.
He does. So, all right, so what else came out this week?
Iron Fist number 4, which I came in late to the game on this book. I went back and got the back issues.
Oh, did you? I didn't know you did that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't come until the second month of Iron Fist. I had to go back and buy the first issue.
I guilted him into it one day.
Yeah, he guilted me into it. Comic
Good work. Good work there.
I thought this was by far the worst issue. And I wanted to know what you guys think of the series so far. I feel like it's getting too bogged down in the mythology, the backstory, and all the different Iron Fists, and I don't really care about that stuff, and I'm getting bored of it.
Well, I think that's the point, though.
Right, if that's where it's going, it may not be the book for me, though.
I mean, I liked this older Iron Fist. I liked them teaming up.
You mean what? Iron Fist Logan?
No, Orson Randall. I liked it. But it was like, I wanted more Danny Rand. You know, I missed the first couple issues that were so great had him, you know, in the boardroom and the company and that all that kind of stuff. And I know this issue wasn't about him. It was more about the Orson dude. But I thought it was a little light on what made the previous issues good.
Right, exactly, which is why I enjoyed it the least amount of all the four issues so far.
Yeah, you know, but it might be necessary for the arc, though.
Yeah, and maybe. I think if you were to read this all at once, like when somebody gets the trade of this, this isn't going to feel like they're not focusing on Danny Rand, I don't think.
But we're not
reading an issue.
No, I know that. In the larger sense of the story, this didn't bother me for those reasons. The only thing I was just confused a little bit about what was going on. And the one other thing is they're sort of taking Danny Rand like he's a neophyte,
like a punk.
Well, yeah. He's not.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I don't know enough about Danny Rand to describe his characterization. I mean, I know he's been around since the 70s, so I don't think he's, like, new on the block. But I think the concept of him not being aware of the Iron Fist history, and, like, there's one point where the guy says, what, you think you're the only one? You know, which I thought was interesting. It's kind of like that status quo changing, like, whoa, you mean there are, you know, like, kind of like, you know, what Vaughn did in Doctor Strange.
Right, exactly is what I was going to say.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, kind of like in that same kind of thing, but I just read that. You know, so, yeah. I don't know.
Why didn't they get rid of the booties?
Because everyone hates the booties. The booties, I love the
ruled.
Booties, but, yeah, I know. I'm pro booties. I'm very pro booties.
He had the booties in the Doctor Strange book.
Yeah?
Yeah, that one scene he was in, he had the booties on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
I don't know. This was just boring.
did you like anything this week?
I had a good time reading comics this week.
Well, what did you like then?
Hold on,
as he leaves, he just left the room.
I liked Jonah Hex. I liked Detective Comics. I liked Omega Flight. I liked Fallen Sun. I liked Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I liked 52.
52. All right, 52 is a big issue for you.
Yeah, 52. This is finally Renee has done her arc is complete, and she is now the Question.
It just took 48 weeks.
I thought it was great. I thought it was a really great slow arc.
Natural.
Yeah, it was totally natural. She was reluctant at first. She didn't want to do it, and she finally came around and embraced it. And
she was trying not to wear the mask right up to the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when she put on the mask, I thought it was awesome. Like that one, that full splash page of her running with the suit. You know, I think the chick in the suit type thing is a little weird, but still. But I understand why. But that page was great, and I thought it was good. Now my question is, did Batwoman die?
I don't think that they resolved that.
Right. Is this going to be another thing where, like,
she got stabbed in the chest. At least they didn't act like she was dead, only for us to find out she won't be.
Right. They left it as, like, a cliffhanger. Because I got to tell you, after all that hullabaloo about introducing
the character.
Yeah,
exactly. I was kind of shocked that if she is dead, that's what's going on.
I was like, that's awesome if they do that. It means all those people spent all that time complaining for nothing.
Yeah, I know.
But it also means that, Jesus, it's a gay character. We better get rid of her as quickly as possible.
Exactly.
But you know what? If it's Greg Rucka writing this, because apparently he writes the Montoya parts pretty much solely. It's the only character who only Rucka writes, I guess. What about, when you started this, were you like, hey, look at the art. It's different again. I went back, and I was like, oh, it's Derek Robertson. I think he was a little rushed.
Yeah, I got the same feeling. I got the same feeling. You know, I was thinking about it, but it was still better than half the artists that were on this book.
I loved it.
It was still good.
Here's my thought what they should have done with the artists. They should have gotten him, Todd Nauck, like a couple of other artists who did a good job on these issues and put them on an issue every 6 to 7 weeks.
Just rotated six or seven artists
and rotated that way, which they kind of did, but there was no consistency in the artist. But if they can't do a monthly book, this is a weekly book, fine. Do it every 6 weeks, 7 weeks or whatever. And if there was some level of consistency with the artist, I would have given – this would have – 52 as a whole would have been like so fantastic.
Well,
you know,
I think that the consistency was supposed to have been lent to by Giffen doing all the breakdowns. And in that sense, it read the same all the way through.
Yeah, but I think that's a little too generous. I mean, I think the layouts. I don't really think the layouts affected the reading. I think it just helped the artist, so they didn't have to worry about laying it out. And Giffen knows how to tell a story, so that, I mean, that helps it too.
Well, that's a big part of it, though.
Yeah, but there was no. But
it was more of a time saver than anything.
Yeah, exactly. I don't feel the layouts gave me consistency. So.
You have a much bigger problem with the art than I have. I really haven't let it bother me in the least because Giffen did all the layouts, all the pacing, and everything was the same. And that's one of the big differences between artists, like the pacing of the storytelling in the
right,
frames.
But the thing is, I'm saying I have no problem with the pacing and the storytelling because Giffen did a good job. I was having a problem with the actual panels drawn.
Yeah.
I thought a lot of them were lacking, you know. So.
I think there's only been a few instances where the art's been so bad. I think for the most part, it's been so.
Yeah, but it was like, you know what? Honestly, those weeks were the weeks that I had fun, where I could be like, Connor, look how bad this is. And it was, but you know, the stories were still good. Sorry,
okay,
I'm choking up. Apparently, I looked at it. And I was like, 48, shit.
Yeah, we're almost
done. Left. I'm upset. Yeah,
I know.
Can you imagine? We were screaming like, oh god, just end Civil War, end it. I don't want this to be over.
Well, hopefully Countdown will still
scratch
that itch.
I mean, it's going to be good. It may be good. Maybe it's going to be a different thing, though.
Yeah,
like,
it's
really. Like, at first we were kind of like, oh, yeah, it's those four.
Remember when we hated it? It was Steel, and it was in the beginning?
How rare is it a thing that it starts off and you're just not sure about it, and it so pays off?
Very rare.
It's such a rare thing.
Well, a similar book to that has been Ant-Man.
Ant-Man. I stuck with it. Neither of you guys did.
Yeah, I bailed.
I never got it in the first place.
It's Kirkman. He writes this reprehensible character, and it sounds to me like the people who are still reading it are enjoying it. Basically, something does need to happen soon, but this issue was a lot of fun. Well, basically, he steals the Ant-Man suit, and his friend dies, and he's a scumbag, and this time he happens to drop into Miss Marvel's purse. Nice. And he takes a nap because he's a lazy scumbag, and like he's like, well, let's see if I can catch her naked and then steal some stuff from her, like that's his thing. And he wakes up and he's like, she's in a SHIELD helicarrier, so he follows her and he's holding on to her sash and he's looking at her butt, and he's behind her as they go into the first battle with the monsters from In Mighty Avengers #1. So this is one of those stories that takes place within the other story that you never knew was happening.
It's like Tag and Bank.
Cool. I like that. I love
that when it's done well and every once in a while. Not all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Cool. I might steal your copy and read that.
And then the fun part is that so he gets thrown out of the battle, and like a couple of blocks down the road he finds the Black Fox. Do you remember the Black Fox from Spider-Man? He's an old man who's a cat burglar.
Okay.
And it's just one of those characters. Remember, like, before you were excited in some issue, you saw the Grey Gargoyle?
I was like,
the Black Fox, who's a silly villain to me. He's a little old man with a big white mustache, and he's, like, a thief. And they have, like, a little fight, and, you know.
Yeah.
Cool. It's a fun book. And this one was drawn by Corey Walker.
Oh, nice.
Invincible. Maybe I'll pick it up. How about that? Maybe I'll come back.
It's fun.
It sounds like this issue is probably a jumping on point.
Well, is this a miniseries or is it an ongoing?
I think it's an ongoing.
Because I know the first six issues are coming out in digest form, actually. Digest
size.
Nice. Yeah. As a trade, yeah. So,
you can jump on now, because one thing that he does in this book is the first page is a big old recap by an ant.
It's a jumping on point, then.
Yep.
So.
It's a good
awesome,
book.
Cool.
I enjoy it.
Excellent.
Well, when the digests finally come out, you can go to comicole.com, because that's your best solution for discounted comics and trade paperbacks, like digests. They've got all new Marvel, like Ant-Man. DC, Dark Horse, Image books, and they're all 40% off. You can stop by their site each month. You can pre-order their books, or you can get a subscription service and have them automatically sent to you every month. In addition to the current comics, you can get an excellent selection of trade paperbacks and old stuff, and they're all 30 to 50% off, too. Check out comicole.com and let us know if you have a good time.
You were on a roll there, and then he just kind of fell off the rails.
I slipped on the banana peel.
they do good work. They got good prices.
Yeah.
It's a nice.
What more can he ask for?
It's not a behemoth monster store, so you know, yeah. it's not an evil corporate overlord. Why not go?
So comichole.com, comichole.com. From their hole to your home.
Thank you all very much, Comichole.
Cool. So let's dive into the email bag. Our first email comes from Sergio B., who loves the podcast. Thank you very much, Sergio. And he loves it when he does get some weird looks from the people around him when he's listening, when he laughs out loud at the weird guy's lame British accent.
That would be me, the weird guy?
Yes, yeah. That's you.
And it's lame.
He heard us talking about asking if teenagers listen, and he's writing in to tell us that he's actually 11, which makes him a preteen.
Or a tween.
A tween. And he challenges us to find someone younger than him who listens to the podcast.
Oh, God, I hope not.
So all you 8, 9, 10-year-olds, I know you're out there. If you're listening to the podcast, write in. Let us know that you're younger than Sergio.
No. Get permission.
We're skewing younger. We're going to start getting sponsors from Kenner. Is Kenner still in business? No, they're not. Mattel and Hasbro. I just dated myself.
I'm pretty sure that our current audience will still be able to get something out of those manufacturers. Yeah,
I think so, too. So Sergio writes in to tell us, asking us if any of us have read Amazing Spider-Girl. Having read and enjoyed everything from Archie comics to V for Vendetta, Amazing Spider-Girl is easily his favorite title. Each issue is good jumping on point and has the feel of a Silver Age book, yet feels modern. Is all ages, parentheses, not for kids, which is a subtle difference. I think the reason they'll pick it up is that they think it's a kiddie book, which it isn't. More people should read this great book. Keep up the great work on the podcast. Okay, here's my theory.
Surprisingly sophisticated for a lot of you.
That Sergio B. is actually Tom DeFalco. Trying to garner some support for Amazing Spider-Girl. Is he still writing that? I don't think so. I'm sorry. Oh, is he? I don't know. Anyway, Sergio...
Is it still around?
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like Marvel. It's kind of like Marvel's version of Manhunter. Every time they try to kill it, they bring it back. It's amazing. So.
How does an 11-year-old know about Silver Age?
And V for Vendetta. I think that's
you shouldn't be reading V for Vendetta.
And when I was 11, I didn't know the subtle differences of anything.
I knew
the differences between gums.
I know that I liked Kit Kat, but I liked Milky Way more.
I knew the subtle difference between Donruss and Fleer. God, anyway. But, yeah, I've heard good things about Amazing Spider-Girl. I've never read it.
No.
But I hear it's good for kids. So if you're 10 and you're younger than Sergio...
Oh, God, don't listen if you're 10.
Or if you're 45 and pretending to be 11, and when you're not on MySpace, go read Amazing Spider-Girl.
Oh, God.
I have a long-time dislike of Tom DeFalco.
For no reason.
No, it's not for no reason. It's like the worst issues that I ever read were his stuff.
Really?
Yeah, I just like would buy a book and it was like Tom DeFalco. It was like a fill-in and he'd been doing it. And he was just so old school Marvel. I
like him though.
Do not like his work. And
he was a good editor in chief.
I've seen stuff where he's at panels and he's like, I don't like all this talking and relationship stuff. People want to see superheroes hit each other.
That's a different time.
I know, and it's not for me.
Well, he's going to write in piss to Sergio.
Wally from Center Reach, Long Island.
Woo! Sorry.
Do you know where that is, Ron?
I know where that is. I used to shop for records in Center Reach.
People put L.I. like it's a state.
It is.
It's not.
It's
anyway.
He writes in and says, I recently wanted to pick up all the old X-Men comics, but when I look online for X-Men comics, all I get are Uncanny X-Men and X-Men Volume 2. So now here are his questions. Number one, why did they change the name during the first run of X-Men?
Okay, I don't exactly know why they changed the name of the during the first run, and by the first run he means Uncanny. What happened was that issue number one of Uncanny X-Men in 1963 was just X-Men, and it was just X-Men until about issue 114 or so, and that's when they started putting the Uncanny in front of X-Men, and then they officially changed the title with issue number 42. I think it was one of those things where it was kind of like a Stan Lee witticism, like the Uncanny.
Well, they were doing that with all like those Incredible Iron Man, those
yeah,
Spider-Man.
Exactly, Incredible Hulk, yeah. Yeah, the Mighty Avengers.
Invincible Iron Man. Yeah.
Uncanny doesn't even make sense.
Uncanny is awesome. They're totally uncanny. I love that word.
What does that mean? Because when somebody has an uncanny resemblance, I guess it's weird. It's weird.
It's weird. It's weird, yeah. Number two, we got more.
Well, no, hang on.
We got lots of questions.
I know. I'm finishing the answer.
Go ahead.
So issue number 142 is when they officially changed it. Moving on.
All right, number two, what happened to X-Men Volume 1 and what is X-Men Volume 2?
X-Men Volume 1 is basically Uncanny X-Men, so X-Men number 1, 1963 through Uncanny X-Men, most current issue is Volume 1. X-Men Volume 2 is the X-Men that launched in 1991 with Jim Lee and Chris Claremont, and is currently, and for a brief time, was New X-Men when Morrison was writing it, and is back to just regular old adjectiveless X-Men.
But isn't there a New X-Men also now?
Yeah, New X-Men, but that's New X-Men.
Oh my God, I've got a headache.
All right, whatever.
No, I mean, that's a lot of different changes.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. Honestly, Morrison fucked it all up, to be honest with you. So
he didn't. Number three is X-Men Volume 2, the current X-Men I read today, the one about to reach issue 200.
Yes.
Okay. Number four, at my bookstore, they have an X-Men Legends Volume 1, Mutant Genesis. Is that X-Men Volume 1 or Volume 2? If it's Volume 2, are they all the rest of them in Volume 2 in a trade paperback form I can pick up somewhere? Or do I have to buy them in single-issue form because I want to collect all the Volume 2 X-Mens?
Go to comichold.com, and you can find all your X-Men needs.
But what is that? What is X-Men Volume 2? You don't know.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know what X-Men Legends is. I thought it was a video game.
Go ahead.
Our next email comes from William from New York, New York. Ooh, it's an East Coast podcast. A quick thought. It seems as if every week Brian Bendis comes up on the old podcast, and as such, I'm compelled to see what you might think. I'm compelled to see if you might think, as I do, that his predilection towards idiosyncratic banter and flashback sap some of his attempts to tell solid stories. Seems to me that whenever I pick up a Bendis book, there is a double gimmick of trademark smartass repartee between two characters, latest New Avengers, for example, followed by a time shift that mostly serves to kill pacing. Mighty Avengers is another example. Bendis has so many strengths as a storyteller, so I hate getting distracted in the middle of a good Michael Bendis comic by devicey techniques. What say you, Fandral, Hogan, and Volstagg?
Who can I be, Fandral?
Sure, I'm Volstagg.
Fatty.
What's wrong with us today? We can't read.
I can't read, and William uses big words. Repartee, idiosyncratic, predilection. What?
He contradicted himself.
Yes.
He did what Bendis does.
Because he said he hates getting distracted, he has so many strengths, but then the things that he named to me are his strengths.
Yeah, that's what Bendis is known for.
The time shift and the repartee and the dialogue, that's why I like Bendis.
But I could see what he's saying is that by using it too much or using it in too tight of a space, it could take away from the other strengths, and I know that
other strengths? Well, those are the strengths.
Well, his strengths are also dialogue.
Well, that's what he's complaining about.
I could see with these examples of New Avengers and Mighty Avengers, I think the complaint has validity, but I don't agree with it, but I could see where he's coming from, because I feel as if Bendis has also been doing this for how many years now? He's been writing Marvel books for 7-8 years. Mm-hmm. I think he's trying to stretch his legs and play with it a little.
Definitely.
And that might be a little different than what you're used to, you know, so.
But basically, what you're saying bugs you doesn't really bug me, I guess.
Well, yeah, any of us, no, this is what I like about him. I think this is going to be a resurgent year for Bendis. I get this feeling.
I agree.
Yeah, 2007. I think he's been held back for a while, and it's
2006. Like, he got buried by Civil War. I think 2007. He's coming out strong.
And 2005, he missed with House of M. Oh, I said it.
Ooh, ouch. So.
Yeah, but he got to do it, and it still is. Yeah, true. They're still feeling
it's resonant. It's still resonant. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Exactly. So.
And you know what he did with House of M?
What
is he retconned? Or whatever, the Grant Morrison stuff you hate. So I don't know what you want.
True. True, I know. I want 1987 back.
It's so
that's what I want.
I thought you'd want 1986 back.
Mark Silvestri?
Silvestri's run on X-Men was great. Dude, I'll pull out those issues and show you. They were good. Back when he didn't care about Hollywood, he could draw. That motherfucker could draw.
Yeah, I had those, actually. I liked them.
Anyway, next
thing. V. Smith writes in, one of you is reading Wolverine Origins, see how well I listen to the podcast. And said that the writer needs to give up writing Wolverine. Why? This is Quesada world, where if the title makes money, it doesn't matter what retarded shit Marvel pushes out. So if you're reading Wolverine Origins, for the pretty pictures or otherwise, you're supporting the bad with the good. That's fucking retarded. I've always believed.
The 11-year-old is listening.
Okay, hang on here. All right. I got a little response here, because I'm the one reading Wolverine Origins.
Yes.
All right. I've previously stated that I think Daniel Way is doing an awful job on it and needs to stop writing it. I've also stated that I love Steve Dillon, and show me a book that Steve Dillon is drawing on a monthly basis, and I'll buy that book. Okay? So, admittedly, I am drawing for the pretty pictures, because, hey, that's half of the comics. They're words and pictures. Sometimes the pictures are sucky and the words are great, and sometimes the words are great and the pictures are sucky, and sometimes they're both good. All right? So that's the first thing. So I'm okay with buying it to see Steve Dillon's art, because I can't see it anywhere else. Secondly, the point, and I'm tired of this point, is that saying that if you don't like it or a book's bad, don't buy it because you're just supporting it. I understand where that comes from conceptually, but here's the problem, and this is how screwed up our comics world is. What you buy doesn't matter.
Yep.
What matters is how many copies your store orders. When we talk about the sales numbers and stuff like that, the only numbers they count are the numbers that the stores order. Okay? And guess what? A book's got Wolverine on it, every store is ordering that book, whether it's good or bad. And there's nothing I can do about it, so me not buying it to make a statement about Daniel Way's writing isn't going to do shit. Okay?
It will and 3 issues later.
It might, but the thing is that unless I'm part of some letter-writing campaign or some sort of online petition or something like that to get everyone to mobilize to either buy or not buy a book, it's not going to matter. And even when that happens, the books still get canceled or the books still keep going. I mean, you've got a book like Manhunter, which everybody loves at DC, which is supposed to be great, which has gotten canceled 3 times already, and luckily it's come back. But for every Manhunter, there's been books that have been great, that are really quality, that the stores didn't order because it's some character that's not a lead character, so they didn't order enough, and even though you wanted it, you couldn't buy it. So I guess the point of this is I understand where you're coming from, and I really wish that our dollars had enough power in this industry, but unfortunately they don't, and that's all Steve Jeppy's fault.
I don't know if that's entirely true. Because eventually it will – if people don't buy the book, eventually people will
If you've been to those little tiny stores, they just buy heavy on the Marvel – and books featuring the big Marvel characters.
What about that old store in Brooklyn?
Yeah, they just – the stacks of Wolverine and X-Men books that nobody bought, but they were there because that's what the little stores buy.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I'm not defending that. I don't think that's right either, but unfortunately that's the way the fucked up distribution system works.
Yeah, but if people did all stop buying stuff that was like if everybody really hated Daniel Way, then 4 or 5 issues in, or stores would say, hey, wait a minute, people aren't buying this, and they would order less.
Conceptually, right.
Well, they're not going to – like if they didn't sell the first 3 issues when previews comes up again, they're not going to order a shitload of them on the 4th and 5th issue. They just won't. It won't make any sense.
Right, now, again, conceptually, but I don't think that happens as easily with Wolverine.
Well, Wolverine books sell. That's the problem.
Right, yeah, right, exactly.
But if people didn't buy them, they wouldn't be selling, and therefore there's your thing.
Right, but
– either way, I mean, if you like the artist and you don't like the writer, I don't buy it for the art. I don't care. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why I don't think there's a problem
with
buying it because
I get my chance at him too.
Yeah.
This is Quesada world where if a title makes money, it doesn't matter what retarded shit Marvel pushes out. Okay, seriously, tell me a better time that Marvel Comics is better overall than right now. But with another editor-in-chief.
1961 through 1967.
Right.
In our lifetimes.
There is not a... There's not a bad like streak going through Marvel. Marvel doesn't suck right now. Marvel sucked 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Marvel sucked eight years ago.
They were unreadable.
Given what we've gone through in the past 20 years, this is a renaissance of Marvel.
It's been good for years. Yeah. It's been so good. What does people have against this guy? He's making comics successful again. Hush.
But at the same time, we can't discount, and DC does it too, is the fact that, and we mentioned this on the site this week with some of the sales numbers, is that as much as we love these stories and we love these characters and have emotional connections to them, to the companies,
it's dollar signs.
Hell yeah.
It's dollar signs, exactly. Wow. Exactly.
If he was any other way than published, continuing to publish successful books, money-wise, he'd be a bad editor-in-chief.
Exactly. Because the thing is that you could put Bendis and Maleev on Iron Fist, and it might sell really well, but it's not going to sell as good as Daredevil did. You know what I mean? Like, the thing is that they're going to go with their lead characters, the ones that people know and can recognize, and because those are what ultimately is going to sell. Wolverine's going to have 17 books with him on the cover every month. I'm an old diehard X-Men fan, and I'm a diehard Wolverine fan. Even I get a little sick of it, but I know that's what sells because there's for the 30,000 of us that are online and passionate about this stuff, there are 75,000 people who are just like, I like that dude with the claws, you know.
Well, but the other thing is like, by and large, though, you know, the books under Marvel are good.
Yeah, you're totally right.
They don't suck. They don't put out stuff that sucks. I think they're generally trying to make good comic books because good comic books sell better.
Yeah, agreed.
Unbalanced, they're much more on the positive side than the negative.
Yeah. We're ornery this week.
Yeah.
If you think we're ornery, you can write us and tell us at contact@ifanboy.com.
I think you slipped 2 letters in that word, but I'm going to move on.
Huh.
It's ornery.
Ornery? Yep. What's ornery?
It's not a
word. It's
not
a word, is it?
Oh, it's the French way of saying Henry.
Ooh, all right, cool. Joe Patrick smacks one out of the park.
All right, our first email... Our first voicemail.
You are.
What's wrong tonight? Oh, my God. Our voicemail.
The 75th show is cursed.
We're just downhill.
Who ran over a gypsy on the way in here?
Just play the voicemail.
Hey, fanboys. It's Sean calling from Southern California. Hey, I got a question for you. I was at my local shop today, and they have instituted what is a wonderful thing, in my opinion, the quarter bin. And I spent far too much time and far too many quarters sorting through it. So my question is this. Are you guys purveyors of the quarter bin? And if so, what has been your best find to date? I didn't find anything great, but I found some old issues of Promethean. Given the video last week, I think I'll be picking those up next time I'm in. And also, Ron, for the love of everything that is holy, go out and pick yourself up Exile on Main Street. If you don't like it, give it 2 weeks or so. I'll donate to iFanboy the $15 you wasted. Talk to you later, fellas. Bye-bye.
All right, we'll start with this last one and then the first one. I don't like the Rolling Stones. I've listened to Exile on the Main Street. I'm sorry.
Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
That was a comic book. I was so confused.
Too. Oh, no. There was a discussion on the site about my distaste for the Rolling Stones. I think it came up in the video. I said it sometime. I made some off thing about not liking the Rolling Stones.
You said it on one of the video shows. Yeah.
Alan Moore.
Yeah. Listen. I've had people who are much closer to me than you, Sean, try to get me to like the Rolling Stones. It's just not going to happen. So, I'm sorry.
He is almost 30. He's had a chance to listen to him.
Yeah, no, and I worked in a record store, so yeah. Quarter Bin, do you think that the Quarter Bin concept is new? Because the Quarter Bin, I grew up in the Quarter Bin.
It's older than Keith Richards.
Yeah, I know exactly. I can't even tell you my best find from a Quarter Bin because I bought Alpha Flight, I bought old Amazing Spider-Mans. Back in the day, you could buy all your back issues were all in the Quarter Bins. Of course, they were in shitty condition. I think it's funny now that Prometheus in the Quarter Bins.
Everything. I mean, because there's no back issue sales anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So I love the Quarter Bin.
I said last week that I hadn't bought a back issue in 10 years, but that I thought about that. And that actually wasn't right. That was from a store. I bought stuff on eBay, but I haven't bought a back issue from a store in forever. Probably.
It's funny. I have no
high school
patience for Quarter Bins.
Really?
For whatever reason, I never have. Just because I don't know what anything is. So
maybe that's how you can find out for a quarter.
It's not the money. It's great. There's a stack of books here that I'm not gonna have time to get to or whatever. Because I buy a lot of books anyway.
Yeah,
I guess. Well, but
missing out. Good stuff. But now I'm curious as to what's in now. I mean, every now and then.
Hey, I'm buying the trades and I'm supporting the industry now.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Our next voicemail comes from the Pacific Northwest.
Hey guys, this is Jim DiBartolo from Portland, Oregon. How you doing? I've been a big fan of the podcast for a while, and saw your video cast today for the Civil War wrap up. That was great. I love the production quality, and it was just fantastic. Anyhow, I listen to your show while I sit here and draw and color and ink and everything for. I'm working on stuff with Dark Horse right now, and I see on your boards that you have a request for asking for trade recommendations, and I noticed you guys don't seem to recommend or talk about, not that you don't like them necessarily, but don't talk about stuff from Dark Horse very often. I know they do have some really good stuff out, and I when you talk about best trades and stuff, I noticed you don't talk about Hellboy ever that I can recall, and I see on your message board you're asking for suggestions, and I recommend especially the early Hellboy stuff, and also Rex Mundi, which is what I'm doing a fill-in issue for Dark Horse right now. I'd recommend that as well. Anyhow, you guys are awesome and love the show, both versions of it, and keep up the great work. Okay, bye-bye.
Connor, what was it you were saying about Dark Horse earlier?
Yes.
Wow, that one bit us in the ass really quickly. We didn't even get the show out before.
Yes.
I like the instant feedback.
How did he know?
Well, he's referring to – I put up a thread because I want to get some new stuff. And a lot of people have said that I should get Hellboy.
Hellboy.
Yeah, I agree with them.
I'll be honest. I've read some Hellboy here and there. And while I do think from an artistic standpoint, I think it's absolutely beautiful – I've never gotten into it very much because I don't really like supernatural stories, and I don't like monsters and stuff like
what
that.
What do you like?
I know. Jesus.
I like.
You know, you should have done in that post. What you didn't do was tell them what you did like.
Well, because you know what, I didn't do that on purpose because I wanted to hear what kind of things people were into, and I wanted to maybe get surprised by something. But like supernatural monsters and stuff like that, I'm not doing. I was like, well, I like historical fiction, but I don't know how much of that there is.
Right.
I got a lot of great recommendations, by the way, and they will be forthcoming.
Yeah, no, I mean, Hellboy is good, and actually, sometimes I feel bad that we don't give Dark Horse as much love as we probably should. And to be honest with you, I was flipping through the Buffy comic, and I saw the ad for that BPRD book, which is like the backup book to Hellboy, like the whole organization. And from what I've seen of Guy Davis's art, it's really good. And I'm kind of curious about that book. I might go pick some stuff up.
Well, we did pick The Escapist as one of our books of the year, 2005.
Yeah,
so that's six. True. So we did give Dark Horse some love there.
They should get Brian Vaughn more work, and then we'll talk about them more. Connor, you have Rex Mundy, right? A couple of the trades?
Yeah, I have one.
I want to read that.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm borrowing your book.
Well, there we go. Done. Excellent.
We've made a love connection.
Yeah.
Just between you and me, we already knew each other.
Man love.
Oh.
All right, and here's our last voicemail.
Hey, guys. Left a message a second ago. It was terrible. Got totally jumbled in what I was saying. So I'm going to try it again if you maybe want to cut it up or splice it, add it on the podcast. So here we go. Hey, iFanboys. This is Matt from Simi Valley, California. Hey, I was wondering with the new Ultimates book coming out, I was wondering what you thought of Joe Mad's art. I love his stuff, but he's just, I know that he's a really late artist. He was doing Battle Chasers when I was in junior high, and I really, really like his stuff. So didn't know what you thought of that. And for Connor, you might want to pick up JLA 7 just because I think this is getting to be the part to where it's what he wanted it to be. It's more like just a society, you know, getting the group together and everything. So, all right. Love the podcast, guys. Keep it up. Bye.
Bit in the ass again.
This is really freaking me out because we get these voicemails before we do the show, and how they knew that we were talking about this stuff is really kind of odd. It's kind of freaking me out. Well, so.
It's a JLA issue. It's not like he wasn't going to buy it.
He went out on a limb to buy it. I think we'll check out this Justice League book.
Like, we'd be taping the show, and he'd be going, "Shit, I missed that?
Oh, damn." Well, he's right that it is way more of what I was looking for.
Sure.
Just not enough. True. But
it's just with the whole Justice. Yeah. So, but to this other question about Joe Mad on the Ultimates, I'm actually really excited because I, too, really like Joe Madureira.
Madureira.
He's from Long Island or lives on Long Island, so represent again. And but also, from what I understand, from what I've heard about the book, is that he's on, like, issue 5 or 6 or 7 by now. Like, they did the work way in advance.
Well, that's because it's going to be 4 years till the first one that we're on now finishes.
Very good point. But they're finally doing what I've been saying, which is get the books in the can before you solicit them and put them out. Like, even Ed McGuinness is starting on Ultimates Volume 3.
Well, again, they've got a 4-year lead time.
Right. Exactly.
I somehow missed that whole Joe Mad craze. That was the time I wasn't reading any X-Men books whatsoever.
He was great on Uncanny. And actually, I mean, I wasn't really into the content of Battle Chasers, but it looked beautiful.
I remember at the time people saying it was very weird and manga-ish.
I bought those back issues right when I first started reading comics again, but I couldn't tell you anything about what the story was except the girl had gigantic boobs.
What in what book?
Battle Chasers. Like, because that was the...
Oh, right, yeah, the redhead.
That was
the huge
big book right when I started reading comics again. Like,
that was that whole
Danger
line with Telios and Danger Girl. And
yeah.
That was the... What was that line called?
Cliffhanger? Right.
Cliffhanger.
Yeah, Cliffhanger, that's what it was.
I mean, I couldn't even tell... If you held up his work... But with a bunch of other random works, like it was a police lineup, I couldn't pick it out, so I have no idea what to expect.
Oh, I'll show it to you. Some of his X-Men work is really good. It's... I mean, he was a beacon of light in a very dark time for the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, dark time
and
from Marvel.
And apparently, he's got a massive Xbox gamer score. No, that's conjecture.
What's funny is that he basically left comics for years, and he did a lot of design work for video games.
Yep.
I mean, like he was honestly one of the pioneers from comics to video game jump. He was doing it in the late 90s.
But wasn't he sort of known for, like, Battle Chasers was ridiculously late because he was a huge celebrity superstar artist and he just wasn't doing it?
Yeah, pretty much. So, all right, cool. Well, if you want to call us and leave us a voicemail, you can call 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. We take all comments, criticisms,
and all apparently psychic voicemails.
Exactly. Someone please tell me the lotto numbers next week. Because I need some money.
You will find a man with a horse. Whoa.
What?
It was a psychic prediction.
You are crazy.
Freaky. All right, so I think that wraps it up, guys.
Yeah.
So let's start easing her out.
Go to ifanboy.com if you want to talk about any of the books that we haven't discussed. There's lots of other ones to talk about. And you can post there on the Pick of the Week thread and discuss it with everybody else. Or you can do it at the iFanboy forums, which are at rev3.com.
What's also at revision3.com.
Yeah, sorry,
revision3.com. Yeah. What's also at revision3 is our lovely video podcast, which comes out every Wednesday around 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Lovely is the word I would use.
And on it, you can see on a weekly basis our thoughts, musings, opinions, and sometimes some creators stop by the old iFanboy Clubhouse. So check it out every Wednesday at ifanboy.com or revision3.com/ifanboy.
You could go to the spaces, as I've started calling them, myspace.com/ifanboy and comicspace.com/ifanboy, and we want you to be our friends.
We do.
And post your funny musings, because we enjoy them and they amuse us.
It's all about musing this week.
Yes.
You can also go to dig.com and iTunes and Podcast Alley and all these other sites, and where you can dig us or vote for us or leave reviews and comment about the show and all that kind of stuff. And it's fun time.
And if you like the shows, you want to throw us some gas money, you can go to donate some cash. You can go to ifanboy.com/donations, or you can click on the donate box on the website and PayPal.
Because we need. Have you seen those gas prices? My God.
Yeah. $3 by my house.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. Anyway.
So now we're old men.
Yeah,
you just got rid of my lawn. You just got rid of the 11-year-old. He's like, no, they sound like my dad. I'm not listening anymore.
We have cars.
But we're on MySpace.
Yeah, we're on MySpace.
Your dad's not on MySpace.
So we're all things to all people all at once?
Yes.
Pretty much.
My God. And the power we wield is enormous then.
And very little at the same time.
That's also true.
It's a paradox. So. It's like time travel.
All right, well, I think that's it. So I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Josh passed out. Josh has nothing witty to say.
He said paradox, and it threw me way off. Because I was like, wait, so if Marty travels back and sees his
father. Oh, God, no. Not down that hole.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.